You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The subtitle of Jamie Metzl's latest novel, Eternal Sonata, is a thriller of the near future. It's set in 2025 and weaves a complex tale involving genetic engineering, extreme human life extension, and carnivorous jellyfish. Mr. Metzl, a senior fellow of the Atlantic Council, has served on the U.S. National Security Council, in the State Department, in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the Asia Society, and the United Nations. This is his third novel. It's published by Arcade. I'm very pleased to welcome Jamie Metzl back to our show.
Hello. Thank you so much, Leonard. Happy to be here.
And you also have a Ph.D. in Southeast Asian History from Oxford, a law degree from Harvard. You're considered an expert on biotechnology and Asian affairs, and then you've worked at all those impressive places I mentioned. Isn't that enough? Why do you also decide to write a thriller?
You know, it's a great question. One is I love to write. I've always written. But I'm also very passionate about issues and ideas, and it's always the same for me. I'll get very excited and interested in a topic, and then I'll start writing nonfiction articles in places like Foreign Affairs or books, and you write these specialized books. And people kind of like you read those books. And I started with my first novel, Depths of the Sea, and also with these last two. You start to think, well, how can I reach people in the way that they can more easily be reached? And we're humans. We tell stories around the fire. And so in thinking about these ideas and what are the real world, what are the human implications of the ideas, that's what translates into these novels. And so I write to help people open their minds.
So the fiction allows you to make complicated issues accessible to the average reader, but also to start them thinking about the real-life consequences of the things you're writing about here. Are these issues that you've dealt with in your various capacities over the years?
Yes, absolutely. So these last two books, and especially the new one, Eternal Sonata, are about the implications of revolutionary technology. We live in times of exponential change. Our minds are very linear. They've developed that way over millennia, living on the savannas where life was kind of like your parents, kind of like your grandparents. Now with exponential change, the speed of transformation of everything is so quick that it's very hard for us to absorb it. Everyone has internalized Moore's law, which is the computing power doubling every 2 years, and that's why your iPhone is continually getting better. But what if there was a Moore's law or something faster than Moore's law that applied to our biology? What if our biology is as hackable as an IT system? And that's what we're discovering. And so what that's going to mean for genetic engineering, for life extension, for disease is just monumental. And so one of my mission is to help people understand that.
And you've set your story in 2025, just 9 years from now. I'm assuming that when you were writing it was 10 years from then.
Yeah.
But why that time frame? Was that just far enough away that you could make educated guesses about the ways technology will have evolved and which new devices might be used in everyday life?
Yeah, that's part of it. In helping people think about the future, I didn't want to make it so far that it's like space opera. No one sees Star Wars and thinks, well, wow, I'm going to have a Wookiee one day. But when you think about science fiction that's just a decade away, I want people to see their own lives in that possible future. And it makes life a little bit easier because you can see where things are going and new developments. And it's interesting for me to think about what that's going to mean in the near term. The farther away, it feels less imminent for people.
Are all the advanced technologies you write about in this book already in the process of being created? You have
yes.
Tesla, for example.
No. So certainly, I mean, the big technology that I talk about is extreme human life extension. And there's miraculous research and very promising research underway about life extension. So there have been manipulations that have let roundworms double their lives, mice almost double their lives. And
that's what I want, long-living mice.
Yeah. Well, it starts with mice, and then it eventually, in one form or another, comes to us. So those technologies are very real. I don't want to do this is a spoiler alert, but we talk about age reversion and chimeric genetic manipulations, bringing animal DNA into humans. That some of that may or may not happen, but it's not made up out of whole cloth. I really try to think about where is the science now and where might it go in some possible realistic future, and then what are the implications of that?
GMO remains a very controversial issue within the sciences. although we're not talking about applying it to humans, we're talking about applying it to the foods that we eat.
Yeah.
You're making that next leap.
Yeah. And I think it's a very important analogy because people are very uncomfortable with GMOs, even though 30 years, and I may get in trouble for saying this, but it's true, 30 years of research into GMOs hasn't really shown that they're any less healthy than normal crops.
It just feels unnatural to a lot of people.
But what does natural mean? I mean, for people, when they say natural, they mean familiar. People like natural organic corn, but go back 12,000 years and find me corn, you can't. You'll find like a weed with a couple of kernels that's unidentifiable. So people say natural, they mean familiar. But if people were uncomfortable with genetically modified crops, what are they going to think about genetically modified humans? And that is part of our future that we need to begin to grapple with.
Your protagonist, Rich Azadian,
yeah.
Is a reporter for the Kansas City Star. Are you from Kansas City?
I am from Kansas City. As a matter of fact, I was there yesterday.
And Rich gets around in the self-driving Tesla. The highways even have special lanes for them in just 9 years from now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's very, very likely to happen. There's a lot of changes that are happening with self-driving vehicles. Convoys of trucks will probably be the first self-driving vehicles on an industrial scale. I think that's going to happen relatively soon. And that's the whole point of exponential changes. The future always happens faster than we would think.
Harder for me to believe is that a self-driving Tesla will be affordable for a newspaper reporter.
Well, I've been told that you're about to get a major raise, so.
Oh, am I?
I write about the future.
In this world, everyone wears something called a universal device or a U.D. Mm-hmm. on their wrist. Is this a combination phone and computer?
Yeah, I mean, my general view is that when we look at photographs of people in the 1970s, we say, wow, look at those crazy hairdos, look at your collar. In the future, when people look at photographs of us now, they'll say, you see that little rectangular thing on the table? That was called a phone. That was when technology was something you carried around and put in your pocket before technology moved inside of you. And so the UD is part of that process. It's something that's strapped around your wrist, and it's just your connector to all kinds of technology.
It's kind of like a mix of a smartphone and an Apple Watch.
It is, but it controls everything. And wherever you go, your content splashes, is the word I use, onto the screens around you. So you just go there and you're in your office and then your content just shows up.
And walls and tables can morph into large computer screens.
Yeah, cars, tables, clothes, and all that is happening.
It's happening right now?
Yeah. It's unevenly distributed, but the cost of making things that function as screens is moving towards basically zero. And that means that we're going to have smart clothes, smart walls, smart houses, and things like that.
My guest is Jamie Metzl, whose latest book is called Eternal Sonata, a thriller of the near future. Food is stored in a freezerator, a combination mm-hmm. of freezer and refrigerator, and it keeps track of which foods have passed their expiration dates and which ones should be discarded. Don't we already have refrigerators like that?
Yeah, that wasn't that great of an innovation. In my last book, Genesis Code, the refrigerator got really snarky and was saying insults like, hey, these eggs are expired. In this one, Eternal Sonata, the freezerator has a bit of a passive role, but I also introduced a home robot. And it was interesting as part of the process of thinking about what a home robot would do, I went to Boston to meet with a robot that was supposed to be the most advanced robot in the world. And I was there interacting with it, and I thought, God, this is terrible. This robot can't do anything. And so I at first thought it was going to be, God, this robot is going to be interacting like a human. And I spoke with a lot of roboticists, and they said, well, in 10 years, it's not going to be that great. In 100 years, it's going to be transformative.
But we're surprised that Watson has become such a great chess player and can mm-hmm. also do so well on Jeopardy. So nobody expected that to happen as quickly as it did.
Yeah, and again, it's another exponential issue. I think Watson's going to be transformational. And as a matter of fact, I was in touch with the Watson team in the preparation of this book because I talk about a Bach Eternal Sonata, which is a Bach sonata that through a computer program variates forever and plays forever, which is a metaphor for eternal life. So I spoke with the Watson team as, can Watson help create a real eternal sonata?
Reproductive technology, which is one of your specialties in real life, has also advanced in your 2025 mm-hmm. world. Most women have their eggs extracted and frozen at the age of 20 for later use. Mm-hmm. So women aren't going to get pregnant in the old-fashioned way anymore?
Well, I've spoken and written a lot about this. I definitely believe that we are moving towards not the total elimination, but the significant elimination of sex for procreation. We'll still have sex for all other reasons. But for procreation, most people, most advantaged people, and then over time, more and more people will have conceive of children through IVF and embryo selection, initially as a way of eliminating many heritable genetic diseases and ultimately allowing them to make other kinds of choices about their future children.
But that would also run into all sorts of problems with many religions.
Absolutely. And that's why one of the things that I'm really pushing for is a global, what I call a species-wide dialogue on the future of human genetic engineering. This stuff, this science is so revolutionary, it's so challenging that we can't do it like GMOs where the scientists think, well, it's so good, we don't even need to have a conversation. We have to have a conversation. It has to be inclusive. It has to be values-based. And we need to figure out what are the balances, what are the trade-offs.
I mentioned that your protagonist writes for a newspaper. In spite of all the technological advances, some things haven't changed. Newspaper business still
I struggle.
On shaky ground.
I struggle with that in both of these, in both Genesis Code and Eternal Sonata. The protagonist is working for a newspaper, right? But in both cases, the newspaper is really under the gun and hanging on by a fragile thread, and that puts a lot of pressures on them.
Now, I can believe in a lot of these things, but one of the things that's hardest for me to accept is the politics. In your book, there's a coalition government of Republicans and Democrats. The president's a Republican, the vice president's a Democrat. In light of the current election, can that kind of nonpartisanship be achieved in just 9 years from now?
You know, whether it's 9 years or 10 years or 20 years, we can see right now a significant shift in the American electorate. The Republican Party is breaking into two pieces. There's the centrist part of the Republican Party, and then there are whatever they're called now, the Tea Parties, the Trumpers, and those two groups don't have a lot in common with each other. On the Democratic side, there's the traditional centrist Democrats, and there's the far left, the Bernie Sanders. And I could
think Bernie Sanders is that far left?
I think that there were people who were supporting, yes, as part of that coalition, there were some very significant parts of the left. And could you imagine that the centrist part of the Republican Party and the centrist part of the Democratic Party came together, or the centrists for the Republican Party felt that they didn't have a home in the Republican Party and they moved over to the Democratic Party, which moved a little bit to the right? I mean, the good thing about being a science fiction writer is you don't need to be right. You just need to raise ideas.
Although some of the things seem inevitable, China becomes a much more important
yes.
world power in your book. Now, we haven't talked about the mystery here, and there are a lot of spoilers involved in that, but you want to talk about it for a moment?
Sure. So
I'll allow you to protect yourself.
Okay. You know, you
mentioned the whole business about reversing age and things of that sort.
Yeah. So it's 2025, and renowned octogenarian scientists dying of terminal cancer are disappearing from hospices around the world, and nobody notices and nobody really cares because these men and women are close to death. But one reporter who you mentioned, Rich Azadian in Kansas City, is investigating one disappearance, and he starts to put the pieces together of a much larger plot. And that leads him to a reclusive scientist named Noam Heller, whose wife had died 10 years ago, as I mentioned. And he has been devoting himself to curing cancer. And he, in his trying to cure cancer, has discovered that you can't cure cancer without reverse aging cancer cells. And in reverse aging cancer cells, he stumbles upon a formula that reverse ages all cells. And then he's killed. And so the protagonist knows that the secret of eternal life has been discovered somewhere. And Dr. Heller has hidden it because he realizes what he's done. And that starts this race between intelligence services and big corporations and others to uncover and unlock the secret of immortality.
Is it okay if I mention that it also involves Arctic jellyfish?
Well, you've already done it. Darn it.
You've competed in the Ironman triathlon, the ultra marathon. Is it marathon?
Ultra marathons, yeah.
What's an ultra marathon?
Well, it's a race that's longer than a marathon. The ones that I do are generally 50K kilometer mountain trail runs, about 32 miles. But I did one in June in Taiwan in the rainforest. It's about 100 degrees, over four mountains, 50 cliff faces, 20 river crossings. It took about 19 hours, and it almost killed me, but I felt like in some spiritual way I must have gotten stronger.
So do you believe that staying in shape is still important, even if we do learn how to reverse age cells?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the science is great, but until the science happens, and even while it's being uncovered, everybody should eat well, exercise, have a positive attitude about life.
This is your second novel that features Rich Azadian.
Yeah.
You going to bring him back again?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it. I've already begun my third novel in this series, and I was thinking, well, maybe I'll just start something new. And yet these characters were like harassing me in my sleep, saying, we're not done. We have more to say. So,
Jamie Metzl, Metzl, his latest book called Brilliant by Ray Kurzweil is Eternal Sonata, a thriller of the near future. It's published by Arcade Books. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much. Always an honor.